we're still in Locarno, and I have another last-minute interview. Actually, there's gonna be a second last-minute, that's now the third last-minute interview tomorrow, but this is the second one, and it's with a great director who is only like, she only has her second film directed yet, and it's already so great. Alice Lowe, hello.
Hello, lovely to meet you.
And you might definitely know her first written feature, which was Sightseers. It was a very dark serial killer comedy. Then your second feature film, which you also directed and wrote, Prevenge, was again a serial killer story. And now it's interesting because we have serial murder in the film, Time Stalker, that's running out of competition in the Piazza Grande. But you get serial killed.
That's right. I thought it was about time that it was my turn. Because this is the thing, if you kill lots of people in a film that you've written, you feel so bad for the actors with all these prosthetics all over their face or their head, and they've got blood coming out of them, and then you've put them in a ditch or something, and it's cold and it's dark. And you just feel bad that you're doing that to them. And I was a bit like, I should really just do that myself. I should do it to myself. Which is really weird. But yeah, I thought it was about time. And that sort of gave me, in a way, gave me the idea. I'd had the idea swimming around for a long time. But once I sort of had this idea of like someone who dies multiple times, I just thought it was a fun way. And I love prosthetics. I love effects. So it was a way of still keeping that in without it just being a serial killer movie.
And it's kind of like a genre or horror turn on Orlando, because we have this woman who gets reborn again and again. Of course, we know that Orlando in Virginia Woolf's classic doesn't get reborn. They just stay young forever. But there's a kind of same principle that this person moves to several relationships, romantic, and they're always the same, and she always ends up marrying the same guy but being in love with the same guy who doesn't notice her much and doesn't see her. And so the literal main character, Time Stalker, is Agnes, which is played by you. So why did you come up with this very funny satire of heterosexual love and romance?
I think it's just when you've been so dominated by these narratives growing up that you're just like, it's the same story over and over again. And you know, it's only when you're trying to write your own sort of idea of a romantic story that you kind of go, why do we stick to these stories? And they're so damaging in some ways, you know, that it's the script that you're supposed to follow, and we never know what happens to Snow White at the end of her story. Maybe she goes to the prince's castle and they just don't get on, and he's like, I really don't like this way you smell or whatever, and she's like, I hate your snoring, or I don't know. We never see the, you never see the reality of that. It's just like the end of the story, end of that character's story. She met this guy, she was happy forever, and of course it's nonsense. And it's just really hard to kind of go, well, how do you escape from that narrative? And I think it's really hard to just throw it away. You have to kind of go, well, for me it was like, well, let's start with a character that sort of believes in that narrative and then fights her way out of it, you know, and escapes this kind of sense of a trap. But even then, does she escape it? I don't know. I think there's always a double bind for female writers where you're sort of like, I know what the story is, I know what I'd rather it was, but is the reality that you get to escape it? Quite often you don't. It's a bit of a fantasy, you know? Like, I find this with sometimes modern day versions of like Little Red Riding Hood or something, that at the end, Little Red Riding Hood, she kicks the wolf and she destroys him and she fights her way out and the wolf doesn't get her. And that's the new version, so it's not scary for children that he eats her. And you're like, well, it sort of feels a bit victim blaming or something. Like, what you're saying, that women should just be able to fight everybody off. Like, it's so easy to fight the wolf. It's not easy to fight the wolf. The wolf is quite scary and strong and violent. And so I think that you get to a point where you're like, I could write the fantasy, but is it any fairer to female characters to kind of show that they just escape and it's fine? And I don't want to be too spoilery about the film, but for me, you can watch the film in two ways. You can believe the fantasy, or you can be cynical when you watch it. And I kind of like that people can make that choice when watching the film, which ending.
also you get to try on a lot of great costumes, because as your character moves through the ages, there's always a costume change, and we have always the period pieces with the most outrageous fashion. Like we have medieval ages, we have the Rococo period, we have the 80s, so we always have like big hair.
Yes, I mean, I just love wigs and makeup and costume. And I think this is some of the thing about being, you know, as an actor, I love all of those things as well. But sometimes those departments get quite neglected in films. Like, it's almost like, get out of the way! You know, a lot of makeup artists talk about this, that people get quite angry on set that they're taking their time doing something. They're like, get out of the way! But then if it's lighting, oh, that's really important. You know, don't rush the lighting person. That's important, you know? And a lot of makeup artists talk about how unfair that is, because makeup isn't as respected sometimes. And I'm like, I'm gonna put that right on my set, because makeup is huge for me. And I mean, I'm not gonna deny it, I just put stuff in the film that I love. It's just like, am I allowed to get, if I'm gonna make a film, which is so rare, to get to make a film, such a rare privilege. I was like, I think I'm just gonna put everything I love in it and everything that I wanna film. And that's going to include like these big transformations, and you know, for me it's like a chocolate box of a film. There's lots of different things in it that I'm like, this is enjoyable, it's fun, it's like fantastical. And I think a lot of British films, partly because we don't have much budget to work with, don't even try to do fantasy or fantastical stuff. Even though we have so much talent in the country, you know, like so many amazing creative people, and we almost don't use them. I don't understand why. So, I mean, we just had an amazing team. I absolutely love my our head of department, makeup designer. She's a genius, and she just like created these incredible looks, and we just had the most fun. She loves the 80s like me as well. So we would just be sending each other pictures of like, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Like, what about this idea? What about this idea? And, you know, really creating looks that are based on real historical stuff, but also just, I was like, but we can also break the rules completely and, you know, do our own thing. And I just love to work in that way, in a very organic, creative way, which I think is becoming a little bit in danger now with film and television. It's like, there's a lot of executives you have to get an idea past. If you're working for a streamer or something, it's like if one of them says, I don't like that, it's not gonna happen. Do you know what I mean? So I think a lot of people in the industry talk about creativity is rare to find in the industry. So again, I'm like, that's why I make films, is I want to be able to be creative, you know. But it's something you have to fight for a little bit, to protect that, I think.
And how did you choose the periods which are picked in the movie for those stories? You already said you loved the 80s, so it was probably the first one to get in there. And how did you pick the other ones?
Well, there's two versions. Like, one is that, like, I chose romantic eras that were sort of about romanticism in its different forms. So, say religion, you know, fanaticism, rock stars, poetry, literature, you know, the romanticism, individualism, which these particular eras, that was like a new thing, you know. And for me, they're just all eras that I'm like, I love these eras, but they're also eras that have been foisted upon me as like, you should love this era because it's Cinderella, or you should love this era because it's women in bonnets, you know.
Great, what's not to love about women in bonnets? I mean, who doesn't love them?
I mean, I love women in bonnets. I was directing in a bonnet, which I feel really proud of myself, that I'm like, yeah, setting the bar quite high here. I directed in a corset and a bonnet. You know, everyone should try it at least once. But you know, for me, there's that. That's the intellectual reason of like, it's about romanticism through the ages and the way that women would sometimes be, you know, enslaved to those narratives. But on the other hand, I just love those eras. So for me, it's like cinematic wish list of like, what do you want to put in a film? What I've always wanted to film a masked ball. Like, that was just one of my like bucket lists. Like, if I never get to do another film, at least I filmed a masked ball. I love things like, I mean, my influences for this film is like a huge Pinterest board that has thousands of images on it. So I was kind of like, I want to do that, I want to do that, I want to do that. And I think we only compromised on one or two. I did have like a Russian character who was going to be in the snow with a train and stuff, and we just couldn't afford to do it. Like an Anna Karenina story. So I'd love to have, there's stuff in there that we couldn't get in there, but generally it was stuff that I was just like, I just wouldn't be able to do that. I don't know if you're allowed to say that as a creative or as a director anymore, but I just wanted to do it because it was fun.
It's fun to watch. I think if people have fun making a film, it's more likely to be enjoyable. That's what I personally think, especially if it has a big comedy part.
I agree totally. I kind of feel like losing the fun and stuff is really dangerous. You kind of go, well, if we're going to get robots to write everything in the future or whatever, then the human element of making stuff is gone, you know, and it's like, I don't know, when people say, I made a cake with love and the cake was imbued with love or whatever, or a meal made with love or whatever. I think that's true with a film. You sort of go, I just wanted like the cast to be this gang of people that you felt like you wanted to hang out with because they were having so much fun, you know, and we did have loads of fun making it. And you know, I was very like, I want people to be able to play around and improvise and stuff. So that just made it a nice environment. And then you hope that translates in terms of people going, oh, I feel like this is a lovely sort of safe space. You know, even the dark things happen in the film, that it's sort of like you just want to hang out with those people, be with those people. And again, that you can't take that for granted on everything that you make, you know. And I know that as an actor, you kind of, you arrive on set and you know within 5 minutes whether people are happy or not. You know, this is not a happy set. Oh dear. You know, and it will usually be the producer or the director, and vice versa. You know within 5 minutes whether everyone's having a lovely time. So, you know, I try to kind of go, there has to be a warmth about this and humanity is the way we work. And that will hopefully come through the film as well.
And how much of the scenes were improvised? You already said that you did improvise a bit, so was it very much written in the beginning, or did you say like, okay, let's go wild?
I never say let's go wild because, you know, you have to do so much slavish work on getting the plot to work that you're just like, oh my god, it's like a game of Jenga. If you pull out too many bricks, the whole tower collapses. You can't just go. I think some people think that about improvisation, that you just pull the whole thing apart. But actually, there's plot points that we had to go for. But then there'll be certain, I call it like structured chaos, where you go, well, this is the scene where we can improvise. This is the scene where we can have fun, and that there would be choice bits. Like, for example, there's a bit where I'm talking about the bird, you know, and Scipio is saying, you're a caged bird, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And anyway, that was improvised, you know, and that was just like a fun thing where I just went, let's just shake the scene up and just change it a little bit, and it ended up being really one of my favourite parts. And actually, there's a scene with Scipio as well where he's drawing throughout the film. He does drawings of what's happening because it's almost like a witness to stuff happening. And Scipio is this great character. And my production designer, who was like looking after the props, she's like, "Has he seen his drawings that he's done?" And I was like, "No." And I'm sort of thinking, "Wow, they must be amazing." And I look at these drawings, they're like these stick men and stuff. And I was like laughing so much. And I just said to Jacob, can we use them in the film? And he was like, yeah. And so like that was improvised, the thing where I sort of say to him, and he's like, do you want to see my drawings? And I'm like, oh, I really can. And it makes me laugh every time because I'm like, knowing that that was just a silly idea and you put it in and like, no one would script that.
Yeah, but it works amazingly well, you know, and it feels like totally organic.
Yeah, and it's improvised, and it's like one of those things that I feel like so much magic gets lost because people don't recognise the thing happening right in front of their eyes and go, let's just put it on screen. It's great, and there's a lot of that in the film where I'm like, oh, this is good. You know, instead of going, oh, it's gone wrong, I didn't want that there, you go, maybe that's interesting, but that's there. We'll use it, you know, there's a lot of that.
And it's also a very queer movie, and interestingly, I don't want to spoil too much, but we have a very nice, elevation of queer love in the end, because one of the best friends of the main characters is actually queer. We also see like that queer love can be the better love, or the more honest, because you have to fight for it much more.
Yeah, well, I wanted that to be, I mean, for me as well, I was kind of like, it's that thing of recognizing what's good for you as well, which I think, yeah, there's a lot about her recognizing her sexuality, which she was repressing, and that's not good for her. Repression is never good for anyone. But also the sense of, like, hopefully in the future there's more freedom to just not be in these little boxes that people get put in, you know, and that I sort of almost feel like it really doesn't matter who she falls in love with. Her real love is just the person whose spirit she is connected to her, you know, and that's the healthy way to live her life, you know. And so, yeah, to me it was kind of like that's how you finally kick it into modernity as a narrative, to kind of go, they, you know, no American rom-com would do that, would have like someone end up with their best friend. They'd be like, oh, we might alienate certain sections of America or something, you know. And so I was just like, you know, this has to happen, because that's just how to make a modern narrative, where I hope in 20 years time people don't even comment on it. They're just so normalized that they're just like, that's just who she loves, that's not a problem. And actually, like, I talk to a lot of, you know, I have kids, they're quite young, but a lot of people who have like teenage kids, who are like, sexuality is so not a big deal for them, which is so lovely, you know, that they're just, someone's gay or straight or whatever, it's so not an issue. And you go, that's like the goal, you know, that you hope that it shouldn't be. And I hope the film is sort of goes some way to going, that's, you know, it's a queer movie, but it's also like a movie for everyone, because I feel like everybody should be able to accept that narrative now and not be shocked by it, or not go, wow, there's a twist. You're like, no, that's just the right thing to happen, you know.
You also have a lot of kind of like splatter moments in it. Was there a point where you wanted to make it like a splatter comedy or a more horror movie? Because that's what you've done before, and it still has some very dark elements.
It does. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people, once you've seen one death and you realize she's going to come back, the deaths become less shocking. And I think there was something interesting in there that I wanted it to have a cartoony sort of element to it, that it's not so gory that you... I don't know, it's a fine line. You know, in the edit, in the writing of it, you're always going, balancing the tone. Like, we could push you really, really dark and really, really violent. And does it then make it harder for her to come back, or for you to accept what's happening? And I felt like I didn't want to push it into a place of a woman being needlessly exploited and abused, you know. It was not about that for me. I kind of was like, it's not an exploitation film, even though I'm exploiting myself, I suppose, because I'm killing myself. But I just really wanted it to still feel that a woman could be in control of being funny and dying, and it not having to be then edging into tragedy. That we could tell those narratives, and it's still, you know, why can't I do what Monty Python was doing, or what, you know? I just, sometimes it frustrates me that like it becomes political as soon as you, as a female director, like sometimes I like it, but sometimes it irritates me, you know, that I'm sort of like, you know, she could die, and it's not that I'm saying that all women get killed by their husbands. Saying that, do you know what I mean? I'm sort of going, this is a quirk of what happens to her, you know. She's just one person, she's not all women. I'm not trying to make statements about all, you know, all women. And I think that was, it was just really careful balance that we had to get, you know.
So we slowly have to move to the end, but one more question. Like, we just talked about, like, I'm doing so many things. Like, does it ever get too much? Like, directing, acting, writing, costumes, makeup, all that stuff where you're involved?
It does. I mean, when it's my own projects, I'm so fully invested, it doesn't feel like work. It's more because I get involved in lots of different projects in different ways. So like I'm here in Switzerland and I'm getting an email about an animation that I need to look at the storyboards and check, and then I've got something else I'm directing that I've got to listen to audio files, and then I've got two young children, and so yes, it does get too much. And sometimes I have to remind myself, you should just focus on your own projects. But you know, it's difficult. It's a financial balance as well. I'd love to just be making my own stuff, but I think as an artist, realistically, it's very hard to be in that position. I wish I was. Fingers crossed, like 2 years' time, I'll come back here and I'll be like, yeah, I only do my own stuff. I'm like Jorgis van Fimos now. That would be my goal. I just get to make whatever I want back to back. But at the moment, I have to do other bits of work, and that makes it very tricky, actually. But yeah, fingers crossed that I don't have to do that.
So I hope I see you here again in 2 years' time. Thank you so much for the interview, Alice Lowe. And you're going to hear me again, guys. I have to cut it short because Big Brother cut me off. Bye-bye.